This conference is being recorded.
And not only did they bypass us, they kicked us completely off the list.
Focus group summaries, and it's really time
thought we flip to the focus or to the plan and look at the challenge that says that we should conduct at least 5 focus groups around the state and ask, do you think we need to do any additional focus groups? So that's actually back on page 3, I think. The very last thing at the bottom of page 3 that says we will conduct 5 focus groups. What's your thought about that? Do you think we're too exhaustion on that?
May I move that we consider that CARPLEX has met activity 1?
Thank you. Is there a second to that?
Okay. Declare victory and move on.
Okay.
Let
us find what we're on
page. We've had 3.
Yeah, I think
she really wants 2 more.
And these were conducted in telephone conference call with telephone conference participation. So
everybody had an opportunity.
It's as broad based as you could do it with the group of direct with
the funds,
the directors and the funds available.
Okay. Alan, did you second that?
No, it's John.
Okay, thank you. All right, let's move on to number 2. This is a big challenge. By December 2008, we failed already, our plaque will recommend a revised and simplified funding formula based on feedback from the focus group.
We have not met that.
No. And it's very likely that the legislature may be simplifying our funding formula for us. But
how much simpler can you get? And there isn't any.
But I wanted you to be aware of what the plan called for because there are some challenges here. By April 2009, DPLS will obtain approval of the revised funding formula from the Board of Regents. And that pretty much fast-tracks things. I don't think we can make that deadline.
But, you know, Kathy, I think this brings up a real good point. Going back and really looking at what we as a whole group collectively have put on as a plan and monitoring and following that plan, I think is something that replat in the state really needs to be focused in on because this really sets our agenda.
It does. And I think this will be a huge challenge for us. By September 09, GPLS will submit the FY 2011 state budget request to the Board of Regents and OPB with support from our plaque and Georgia Council of Public Libraries. And then you can see.
We'll definitely do that one.
I think at that point we do need to be ready to move forward with whatever funding formula we have. And then you can see Objective 2, Objective 3, state and local matching grant programs. Do we want to consider any kind of incentive grants at this point? Do you have any feelings about incentive grants? No money. Unless there's LSTA money, which we've seen in the...
Well, does this need to be updated, Jim?
Well, that's what I'm thinking.
I think we're at the point. This is, in a sense, this is our, with your input, our strategic plan. And there's some things, obviously, that we've done and some that we've just had to put on the back burner, like any plan. And... It probably does need updating. It's now well over a year old since this was adopted.
About November of 2007.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to get to that. It's obvious that we can't take this all in one big bite and do it in our RPLAC meeting. So I have a plan to approach it, and I'll talk about that in a minute.
basically, what I'd like to ask is if anyone has reviewed this and sees anything other than dates that you think need to be changed, those targets for the plan.
I wondered when you sent it out and I was really forced to look at it again, if they were set in priority order. I think that would be a useful strategic planning tool to set the objectives and the goals in priority order from the state and the director's point of view.
Consider if these are still
valid,
relevant goals. You decide on those, and then you can drop down to the objectives, and then you, mm-hmm. then you hone in on the activities. I think these are fairly broad goal statements.
I think they were intended to be.
Yeah.
I mean, is it more important now for us to focus on continuing education as a goal, or is it more important to have, which is on page 3, adequate, stable, and equitable funding as a goal?
Exactly.
I don't know if continuing education is the seminars on how to get along with nothing at all, then that might skip
over. And the fact is that really communication technology and marketing right now are all above funding.
Yeah,
I don't know if these are, I could not say that these are necessarily, and then Julie, do you have any clue? I don't believe these were in any priority order.
Well, what I would like to do is appoint some ad hoc committees at each of the goals and to come back in March just looking at the goals, objectives, and activities for each one, and let's make sure that they're still relevant. Look at the performance measures. And most importantly, think about funding implications. So I've put each of the RPLAC members on an ad hoc committee, and what I'd like to encourage you to do is work as a team and invite other directors, non-RPLAC directors, who might have similar interests, to join the committee and really talk about the issues. And I think you can do this mostly through email. I don't think it has to be a face-to-face because I'm very cognizant of travel issues. But I'd like to have the team just review the plan for their specific area back to the group in March. And for those of you on the phone, if there is someone on the phone.
On the phone.
Dusty, is that you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Dusty. I put you on the continuing education committee with Richard.
Okay.
Would encourage you to invite other directors that you think would have a similar interest.
Okay.
And then come back at the March meeting, and I'll email this to you.
Okay.
Are you appointing someone as a chair?
I'm hoping that the committees will appoint a chair from within.
I nominate Dusty. Oh, sorry.
This is not a Methodist meeting.
Okay, is that pretty clear that we would look at the goals in the plan, one goal per committee, and then come back at the March meeting with an evaluation of what's happened so far and where you see the objectives and activities moving in the future. And if you think there's an immediate funding issue, we just want to identify it. You don't have to put any dollars attached to it. So, is that workable?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. And just a reminder to look at the focus groups, the summaries that we've received from the 3 different focus groups,
because you may want to incorporate some of the statements that would apply to your specific area. Yes, sir.
If we wanted to be on either a second one or a different one, do we just talk to you about it, or do you want to deal
yes.
with that now, or what?
No. Talk to me.
Okay.
Or talk to the people on the committee.
Okay.
Okay. The Hocking Book Center concerns Susan.
This way. Well, I thought that since we had an ad hoc committee, we'd report in March. But I had the opportunity, and most of y'all heard Columbus saying they wanted to give up their Talking Book Center at our last director's meeting. And following the lead of Rome and Lafayette, Columbus director, Claudia Muller, and I met Lynn Hopper and Stella Combs to see how we could do what looked like was going on with Lafayette and Rome. And in trying to get the information together, because Stella and Lynn said we had to present a budget similar to what Rome and Lafayette did, I was trying to get information so that I could see, because my whole goal with Decatur County being the highest percentage of loss of jobs in the state of Georgia, was to retain my two full-time equivalents, which is four people down there in the Talking Book Center, that if we could meet the patron needs better, which is the Himmel and Wilson study highlighted the job that Bainbridge Subregional Library was doing as one of the highest quality in the state of Georgia. I thought we could go forward with that. So in putting together information, I found it really, really eye-opening. And I just brought some of the information. Of course, this has been shared with Lynn and Julie and Claudia and Suzanne. And it just kind of gives us, and this is backdated before December, because as you remember, this was happening when Julie made the announcement that this was going on, and if you'll just pass that around. But this is the first handout is comparative statistical data for Georgia's subregional libraries for blind and physically handicapped that I was not able to get from the state. So I had worked with Stephen Klein at the National Library Service to pull some of the data here and then just extracted it and had Lynn and Stella look over to make sure that what I was stating from the various emails was correct. But it just gives you an update of what the Department of Administrative Services performance audit on all the TBCs chart did back in 2002. And I went through all of the old studies. One was in 2000, the Himmel and Wilson study, and just did an extract of the recommendations that they had laid out about where Georgia's Talking Book Centers were and what we could do to be in meeting the needs of the patrons. And it was real interesting that both documents were saying that Talking Book Centers in Georgia were doing a really good job of meeting the patron needs on a sub-regional basis. But there were some inefficiencies in distribution of services, and there was no accountability and no oversight at the state level. And so giving you an update there, because that is, according to the bylaws of RECLAC, one of the things that we are here to do is to recommend to the developing plans and recommend optimal organization and relationships in and among library systems by giving guidance and plans to ensure that happens. So I just give that to you as replace committee members to show that we really have been trying to work together to do what is in the best interest of the whole state and, most importantly, to these blind and physically handicapped patrons. I also reviewed the contract that all of the sub-regional libraries are operating under, which was the 2004 contract, an agreement with the sub-regional library Talking Book Center grant for service to the blind and disabled, that stipulates that whereas the state of Georgia currently provides funds for sub-regional library service through a funding formula as approved by the Office of Planning and Budget. And I did, in fact, try to get that formula from Trey Childress at the Office of Planning and Budget, and have not heard back from him yet. But so what we are operating under now...
Yeah, I'm sure he's never heard of it. But.
Probably, yeah. Well, and just because in proposing the budget, because my board is aware that we are doing this, as is Doreen, I wanted to make sure that we were legally in compliance with all that it was saying in the contract. And I also had an informal discussion with a lawyer from another state who cautioned me even further, and I just wanted to bring this before the board because it is a little more complicated than I thought at first when I said that, Claudia, yes, I'd like to take on what you're doing. But anyway, this is the formula that David Singleton sent out a letter that sub-regional libraries are operating under as of May 22nd, 2007. And Lamar has sent out a subsequent letter that kind of takes this into consideration. But it goes into the formula for 08, and y'all can read that. We no longer have the circulation. We just have the a dollar per estimated NLS population, National Library Service population, and then $30 per active patron. And I think it's one deposit equals six patrons. So it's really a population-based formula now, which makes it really a lot fairer. But it does focus more of the money on the population, and then we go from there. So upshot is, I asked for a long-range plan, and the state is developing a long-range plan, which is what the Department of Administrative Services performance audit did say was one of the number one things that they would like the state to do. I thought the other interesting thing that it said was that the sub-regional libraries are doing an excellent job now. They need to be more efficient, but they're doing an excellent job with the patrons. And so I had put together a little list of recommendations to RPLAC prior to having a discussion informally with this lawyer. And one of the things when I told her what was going on and what we were finding out was we were looking at the most inexpensive way to distribute the materials but still serve the patron needs. And she says the only thing there that you have to watch out for, it's just like closing your meeting booth. If you affect a group who has been previously using that, especially one who's in a protected class, which is what the disabled are, and you're sending out materials to everybody else, speaking of the pine, and they're getting those on a consistent basis, and then you're sending these Talking Books out through a centralized system that the disabled people are not getting them in a timely fashion, mm-hmm. There's your potential for lawsuit, and it would be a class action lawsuit. So that just raised a red flag.
So what are you suggesting?
Well, I'm just suggesting.
We work on.
I'm just suggesting, and you know, one of the things I think we need to really be looking at is having statistical data that we can pull and look at what is efficient and still make sure that we are having this in a way that everybody can see that we have performance standards so that I know that just anecdotally, you tell your situation with what's been going on, and I know that they're still working out kinks, but I don't want to go there if it's going to take 91 days.
Yeah, I've actually had a library patron who had macular degeneration, and she had finally agreed to sign up for the service. And it was kind of like giving up to her, you know. And so we really felt like we wanted to make sure that she had a good experience. So we set her up with a tape player and a supply of tapes to begin, and mailed off her application as per usual. And her daughter happened to be back in the library, and this was 3 months after. And I asked how the service was. She actually came in to get some more tapes, and I said, well, has she gone through the ones that they've sent her already and, you know, asked her? And they had never sent her any, and it had been 91 days.
Okay.
And part of the problem is that there had been really no word of where we really needed to send applications, who was in charge, what we needed to do. So there had been very little communication.
Who was your talking book, sir?
It was Lafayette. Now it's partly Lafayette and partly Rome.
You don't know who's
so we don't know who's handling what, and we've had very little information about it. But I was really frustrated about the fact that.
Well, yeah, that's.
And the same situation happened in Worth County.
Well, that's certainly those are certainly cracks in the system that need to be. You know, they shouldn't be there.
Well, and I asked for an additional supply of talking books.
And was Stella or anybody at the Atlanta region contacted about this?
No, this just happened last week, and I haven't really
talked to anybody
about it.
That's the kind of thing that one phone call could fix it.
Right.
If you knew it was going on.
Well, actually, I did go ahead and email everybody concerned. That,
yeah.
You know,
because
ideally that's the case, but it took Worth County, and we had to go in and change it ourselves.
Okay, but where was the
flaw was in the transfer of the Worth County patron. So
to whom?
To Albany.
Okay.
So I had to go in.
So those were issues at the sub-regional level.
No, they were issues.
No.
At this point, they were issues at the regional level.
At the Atlanta level? Why?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Is that Teresa?
Yeah, I'm here.
Tell us about it.
Well, basically, for one thing, we were never actually told that these two counties might be coming in with us. We actually had to contact the state and ask them, do you think they'd like to come in with us since they're both spinning off of their own? And we had a little trouble getting information back, and we did finally get the information, but we
only because Katie called me and I authorized it.
Well,
we'll do it.
I mean, you do know that Stella works for me and for Julie. And
well, we worked it out. I mean, it wasn't a major thing, but it was definitely the burden was on us to do it, and it would have been a little easier if we could have had a little better communication.
Well,
It was not.
I can understand that, but to say that an application was lost between, and we know what happened in Lafayette. There was a person there who was not there anymore. Who knows whose desk this thing sat on for a while.
Exactly.
That's, unless we know about it at the Atlanta level, we can't fix it.
Right.
But, you know, I just want to say at the end of this is all wonderful study. we have a certain amount of money, and this is the one service that is the state's responsibility. You all are simply contractors to fulfill that service, and we want to make sure that we're focusing on this as a statewide service. Is 12 sub-regionals the right number? That's twice as many as any other state in the country has.
And we spent $50,000 on this audit.
Who did?
Say, the Himmel and Wilson study.
Well, it was so long ago, I have no clue. clue as to who did that and how much it cost.
It was Himmel and Wilson, and $50,000 sounds about right. This is Jerry.
And it gets a step-by-step process of what we could, what we should have been doing for the last 9 years. It was followed up by the Department of Administrative Services performance that said that the sub-regionals are doing great, but you need to really refocus efficiency, because Ray Mitchell did his own private little study.
Well, what do you have some specific recommendations, and I don't mean to be argumentative or controversial, but do you have some specific recommendations that we could consider putting into place?
No.
I know we put in the, I know we did the contracts, and we need to, those need to be revised.
They need to be updated. 2004.
As I say,
I think that every public library director needs to see all of these rules, formulas, and regulations on a website that says state grants. And the long-range class needs to come up with a long-range plan. If we as sub-regional libraries have to have a long-range plan updated every year, then certainly the state, we have to have something to fall into to see where y'all are going. And we have not had that for 10 years.
Okay.
Even though it's been promoted by a $50,000 study.
All right.
And then come up again with your auditors.
Okay.
And it's like, you know, you do this, and then you don't look back to see what you've done.
So, Susan and Gary, you have a great opportunity with this ad hoc committee to develop the, work with Stella to develop the plan and make some recommendations to this.
And I actually have a new draft contract in my inbox from Stella this week that I'll be looking at.
But I know
but
there has,
I
they have been working
to,
on.
And I would love to hear the Board of Regents legal counsel on this little informal discussion about this little thing that I hadn't even thought about with a delivery system that it takes sometimes, as Ray Mitchell did in his two-month study when he did requests to Atlanta and he did requests to Bainbridge, because I checked with the post office and trying to come up with a proposal and a budget proposal to submit for Claudia and I to merge, similar to what y'all have authorized Lafayette and Rome to.
Well, how long ago was Ray's study?
Well, we can contact him. I think it was about 5 years ago.
I'm not sure that's relevant at this point because it is a little bit old.
Well,
but his,
it's not a study. It's black and white, Lamont.
Well,
let me finish.
Okay.
He would request the same books from Atlanta that he did from Bainbridge. He would get them from Bainbridge the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes he showed us the little, and he brought it up at a director's meeting. And some of these meetings we were, he said it would take 3 to 4 weeks from Atlanta.
I don't think that study is relevant anymore.
Probably not one of these are, since nobody has ever looked at it.
And that's the issue.
What is when you let it lie there for so long with no action?
Okay, I think we have actually tackled a lot of those issues during the course of the last couple of years, but we do need to make a report and give that back to you.
I would also like to make a suggestion in addition to this. I would really like to see, because this is a question I have from my staff all the time, who do I contact if I have a problem? And so if there were something on the website or something that had, if you live in this county, you contact this person with regards to outreach, this person with regards to applications, this person with regard to circulation, requests for materials, whatever, problems with your player.
There is a single 800 number that goes into the glass office that will handle any of those issues. Now, if that information is not getting out to every patron,
well, the thing is, our patrons don't call those 800 numbers.
They call us.
They call the local contact.
Don't your staff know that they can make that referral?
They do, but as I say, the patrons don't want to call glass. They want to call the library and let the library staff do it.
Can the library staff call glass and run that interference for them?
They can, but as I say, they still want to know the name of a person and who's responsible for what. They really want to know that.
Okay.
And it's harder on them because, you know, without being able to...
No. I understand that, but it's our problem. If every library staff in the state doesn't know that there is that single number that can handle all of those issues for them, even if they're being served by a sub-regional.
Well, we had actually been told one time to call our sub-regional, not to call the glass number, but to call our sub-regional.
How long ago do you think that instruction was?
Oh, just a couple of years.
Okay.
A couple of years ago.